Welcome to Country Fried Rock, where we talk with musicians to find out what inspires their creativity. Country Fried Rock, music uncovered. Hey, Taylor, this is Sloane Spencer from Country Fried Rock.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing great.
Fantastic. So thank you much. I appreciate you being with us on Country Fried Rock.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How did you get into music as a kid?
My brother and I grew up in a musical family, and whenever there was at the end of family dinners or holidays or anything, everyone would just always end up singing. Our dad was a great piano player and songwriter. So here's another song, how much anymore. But yeah, he brought us up very much in love with music, and we never really felt like, we never really made a choice of this is what we're going to do. It was always just already agreed upon thing that music was what our lives were going to be all about.
Cool. So what kind of stuff did your dad play?
It was more R&B, funk, and soul kind of stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
Heroes were guys like Otis Redding and James Brown, and so that's what he brought us up on.
Where'd the band name come from?
That's me and the drummer's grandfather's name.
Where'd y'all grow up?
Los Angeles, California, different parts. Started out in Glendale and went to high school out in Malibu and different areas of LA.
The whole Southern California area has a lot of different musical influences, and your dad was into the funk and the R&B. What other kind of stuff played on your interests as y'all were developing?
It's like thoughts was coming together. I started listening to a lot of stuff that I wasn't really thinking about it. I was just really getting into Joni Mitchell and Jackson Brown and The Grateful Dead and Warren Zevon. And as time went on, I started to realize that all these artists, they're all California artists. And I didn't even realize that at first, but I guess there's just something that permeated with their songwriting personalities that resonated with me. That might have been that the fact that we were both coming from that same world. So that was a big, that was like in terms of what California music comes from, that was a big deal for me, even though I wasn't even quite aware of it. And I think that even made it that much bigger of a deal.
Even though y'all are on the same page creatively and with what's influencing you since you've come together with Dawes, how does that work for you all as you all work together to develop a song as a group?
I write the songs by myself, and then we all kind of come together to arrange them when it comes to how we're going to how we're going to present the song, and we sort of lean on each other for what, you know, what they're good at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I'll have a song on acoustic guitar, and then I'll bring it to the guys and how do you think we should do this, and then we'll kind of go through the different ideas till we arrive upon something that everyone feels like this is a good way to show people this song. So we definitely lean on each other. I don't really decide upon anything until we're all together. The only thing I do is the chords and the words and the melodies, and then everything goes to what the drummer plays. The drummer decides what the bass player plays, what he decides.
Y'all really have refined what it is people expect when they come to your shows. Are there any songs in particular that have evolved a lot for you all with all of this time on the road?
I think with certain things, it ends up growing on stage, and a song like Love Is All I Am,
mm-hmm.
or a song on the new record called A Little Bit of Everything, the dynamics don't get that big. It tends to be a more or less a smaller, something that suits the song and just something that's mellow all throughout, and that's that. But then live, they end up having an arc to it where they start at that level, and then with the lyric and with the feeling of the song tends
mm-hmm.
to grow a little bigger than it does in the record, and then kind of come back down. So it doesn't kind of stay on this one level being this ballad. It turns into a more of a arced experience.
Y'all are on the road quite a bit, obviously. What can you agree on to listen to?
Well, where we're driving tends to put on the music. You know, some guys are doing different stuff, so someone might be reading a book in the back and have the music faded up so they don't have to hear that, or whatever. Or we're all listening to stuff. I mean, we all have different tastes, and they're sometimes sort of dictated by the instrument we play, which is kind of cool. Like, our bass player listens to a lot of the R&B and soul music, and a lot of stuff that's really bass-driven, and it's perfect for him to be listening to that. And then I might listen to a lot of song-based stuff that the band might not want to even sound like, but stuff that I respond to as a songwriter. And, you know, along those lines, we all kind of have our own tastes, but the same taste, kind of.
Do you get the opportunity to listen to any of the bands that are opening for you all?
Totally. I try. If a band's going to open for us, we want to make sure it's something that we want to be represented by as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, last fall when we went out and Vetiver was main support, that was a big deal for us because those guys are heroes of ours. Really, we've admired that band for a long time. Stuff like that, we always make sure that we feel represented by the band that's opening for us. So we always make sure to give it a good listen before and during the tour.
Have you had anyone in the last year or so that you really were just turned on to because of that?
You know, we actually, like everyone that we've gone out with has tended to be bands that we're already familiar with. Like the Romney Rye were friends of ours beforehand, and, you know, it was really fun to get to play with them every night. And then Vetiver were, you know, some heroes of ours. So, you know, examples like that. But there hasn't really been that many groups where we didn't know who they were before the show.
So as y'all are on the road, where do you like to stop and eat?
Oh, we always like to try to find local cool spots. I wouldn't call us health nuts, but we don't ever eat in any fast food places or anything. Not because we're against it, but just because I feel like once we open ourselves up to that being okay, I feel like we can get carried away and it'll just be.
Yeah. Who's in charge of deciding where you go?
I mean, I guess we all are, but we always have to really cater to Wiley, our bass player. He's the one that doesn't eat any meat ever. So if there's a spot that's like a really great barbecue spot, like the only way we feel okay going there is if we make sure that he's taken care of and we're going somewhere else that can eat at. But we're all pretty healthy guys. Every city that we find a Whole Foods in, we're pretty excited about that. But
right.
Like today we're in Asheville. We just ate at an incredible breakfast spot and we all had really weird local selections that were delicious. But it's not like, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go get some fried biscuits and gravy or something like that. Early Girl.
Is that where y'all went?
Yeah.
Oh, that place is great.
You've heard of it?
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible. That's what we just ate. It was insanely good.
I'm in the South, so I can say this, and I'm from the South. It can get difficult to find healthful food options on the road around here.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I really respect the challenge that is for Wiley.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it can be hard, but we can figure it out. I mean, the bigger cities always have a Whole Foods.
Right.
As long as there's a Whole Foods, we're pretty fine. We're all fine. But yeah, I mean, like there's always like a Thai place or something nearby that makes it all right. So we don't get stuck with no options ever that often.
That's good. So are y'all coffee people?
Yeah, I'm a big coffee guy.
What do you have to have?
I don't know. I just like to find a strong cup of coffee wherever I go. I mean, if there's nothing else than Starbucks, even though it's not like my favorite, I at least know it's got some strength to it. But I mean, like there's some really awesome spots around the country, like Intelligentsia and Blue Bottle and Stumptown and really cool beans that local spots sometimes brew. And that's always really fun to come across those spots.
I mean, gosh, it's only been, 5 years? Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, our album came out officially about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago.
As you all are moving then into this next one, have you been road testing these songs?
Yeah, we've been playing the new material on stages for a long time. I feel like most people that are familiar with Dawes know just about every song on the new album, which, you know, for some people might be a bummer, but I think for most people, they'll be excited that these songs, they've sort of grown. Like they've watched the songs grow in front of them, and you know the song that they might want to always hear live when they come to the show, now they're going to get to have their recorded version finally. So I think it's a cool thing. But yeah, we've played our new material on stages more than I think other bands even tend to want to.
Has anything changed in particular over time from when you first started playing it live to as you went into the studio with it?
Not really. like some songs there'll be subtle changes that we'll learn that work better than others. Like, okay, we shouldn't do that, or we should trim that part down or make that part longer just for the sake of like what worked on stage and what didn't. But but overall, there haven't been like these wild changes to songs for the sake of between the first time we played it on stage and then by the time we recorded it.
You've been on the road a ton. What kind of venues have really been a pleasant surprise for you in the recent past?
We'll get to some cities and we won't really have any idea as to how many people will come out, and they'll just be, you know, like when we played First Avenue in Minneapolis, I didn't really think that we should be playing that venue, but then it ended up being almost sold out, and it was a headlining show in front of 1,400 people, and that was really great.
Yeah.
And even just the other day, we played in St. Augustine, Florida, a headlining show, and we never played there, so I was like, oh man, I hope at least 20 people come. It ended up being a packed room, and it wasn't a huge room, it was like 200 people or something, but it was packed, and so it felt really great. But yeah, I mean, like the venues, like in terms of us being like surprised by the sound and the vibe of the venue, that happens all the time, and it seems just at random. It just seems like with a band that loves a certain venue, we might have an off night with, and vice versa, we might have a great night in a really dingy spot that everyone else will say is terrible. So
true.
I feel like it's always hard to say like what's an accurate impression from an actual venue, for us at least.
Well, so you all are kind of in that transition from working it hard for years and being the band opening for the more well-recognized name, but now you're the lead band and you're the headliner.
Well, it's actually, like, you know, it's funny. I feel like it's sort of a bit of a cycle. Like, with our first album, we went out opening for bands of a certain size, like Fear Tick and Delta Spirit and Langhorne Slim. And then at the end of that touring cycle, we were the headlining band, more or less on a similar level as what they're on. And then with this album, we're about to release it, and we're going to be doing a summer's worth of support slots. But we've sort of like stepped it up in terms of who we're opening for. It's a bigger named artists like Bright Eyes and Alison Krauss and Brett Denon. And so we're hoping that by stepping up the size of the artists we're opening for, then we'll hopefully, it'll be a repeat experience of our first record cycle, but just on maybe, ideally, the next tier. You know, I don't think every band does it this way, but that's the way we're trying to do it.
It's great. Whatever works. That's yeah. Cool. So y'all have a lot on the plate for the summer. Where are you headed that stands out for you? Do you do festivals?
Yeah, we did a lot of festivals last year. We're going to try to do a bunch this year, but, you know, a lot of those main ones don't let fans do 2 years in a row. So
right.
We're not going to be at Lollapalooza or Bonnaroo or the ones we did last year. We're hopefully going to end this record cycle next year doing those festivals.
That'd be fun.
But as of now, it's just really cool festivals like Mountain Jam and stuff like that. So we're still out there doing some stuff, but it's not necessarily that.
When you all head into the studio, you've had the opportunity now to have some assistance in the production and the method in which it happens. What do you all look for? When you start out as a band, it's, you know, hey, can we scrap together enough dollars to head into the studio? And then it's, you know, you head to a level where it's like, wow, let's choose a producer for this. And then,
right.
We
felt like a lot of the good things that have happened for our band have been because of our producer and because of the job he did on the first one. I feel like he helped create a sound and an aesthetic for this band by, you know, insisting that we keep it all on analog and that, you know, none of the effects are digital and none of
right.
like that. I feel like that's been a big part of what people know about Dawes, if they care, you know, like if they're a fan of Dawes, I feel like that's a part of the whole story thing that's attributed to him in a lot of ways. And so for us, with a lot of, you know, bands that create relationships with their producer, we feel like we're not Dawes without him when it comes to getting stuff recorded. So, like, you know, we could have the budget to go hire Rick Rubin or whoever, and I mean, not that we did at all, but if we did, that would still be our guy.
It sounds to me as if you track it live and then maybe some minimal overdubbing. Is that right?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, we track it live, and then the first record, it was a lot more like, you know, as much as possible live, just because we had such a limited amount of time. But for the second one, we spent a month instead of 2 weeks, and we, you know, for the most part, like, we had to keep certain things live because that's how we work best. Wiley and Griffin on bass and drums are at their best when they're playing together and they're reading each other and they're following each other, and that's how it should be. But you know, there are certain things where, like, you know, yet another guitar or just making sure, like, the vocal take sounds a little more inspired, so, like, we'll redo that or something. But a lot of it was definitely live.
So I have a random question for you that a listener of mine sent in and wants me to ask, so I will.
All right.
Do you raise those chickens?
Yeah. That was our EPK for our first album. And we were at our piano player Tay's parents' house in upstate New York. They raised chickens, and we had to get the CPK done, so we were like, let's just film it at this cool pig roast. And so that was what we were walking around, and at that point, when I was saying those things, I happened to be next to a bunch of chickens.
Do you take turns with the driving?
Yeah, we all take turns. We rotate out. Try to do a full day's drive each, or not a full day's drive, but like at least a full gas tank, maybe two.
You mentioned earlier that, like, obviously the bass player has more bass-oriented musical interests with some soul and R&B. What is he like?
He's actually right next to me here. Hello?
I was putting Taylor on the spot. He said that you had soul and R&B interests in the music that you listen to, and I was putting him on the spot saying, yeah, so what does he listen to?
I listen to a lot of Zach Bolt records, you know, like all the Booker T records and, like, anything like Dust Gun produced, Meters, a lot of New Orleans stuff I listen to as well, you know, like Lee Dorsey and, like, Alan Toussaint, a bunch of that good stuff. And then, what else? A bunch of Phil Withers all the time. Kind of goes on forever. Delaney and Bonnie's one of my big ones.
So are you into any of the newer stuff that's coming out with kind of that Stax feel?
Nah, I mean, I've never really heard. I mean, I don't really give it probably a fair enough chance. I just like so much like older records. I'm still, I can go to a record store every day and pick up like 10 new records that'll like blow my mind, you know,
yeah.
Like old ones. Like, I've never really given it a chance to go around. I keep feeling like I have to get all the old ones before I even start to listen to the new ones, you know?
Right. So when you get home, do you get to listen to your vinyl, or how do you, because
yeah,
like, on the road,
yeah,
you can't
do
really do
vinyl.
That.
And when I'm at home, it's all vinyl for sure. But
yeah.
On the road, I just buy CDs all the time. And then I got my iPod out here, but
right.
Definitely prefer it on the, I got my whole like system super dialed in at home, you know?
Cool. So in terms of, with vinyl having its own kind of resurgence.
Yeah. I mean, we print vinyls for all our stuff. Always, and then they're all super nice, like 180 gram, like double LPs at 45. Both of our records are that way. And we do it all at the tape, so by the time it hits the vinyl for us, like no computer's ever touched it, you know what I mean? It's taped to the vinyl.
In your live performances, are y'all using like tube amps and that sort of thing too?
Yeah, all our gear is pretty old, and I mean, if any of it's not old, it's all like pretty customized. I build a lot of it for us, or I try to, and I maintain it all.
Oh, cool. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and Griffin's playing all old drums. We all got tube amps. We have a bunch of crazy old tube keyboards and pianos and organs and all that stuff, you know?
Cool. I didn't realize that. I haven't had a chance to see y'all live. I've only listened.
Yeah. No, it's cool. It's definitely like we definitely got the most gear out of anyone I know.
The tubes alone are an issue, I know.
Yeah, I know. I've got cases full of extra tubes and like three toolkits I carry around with us all the time, you know?
Do you have a favorite kind?
I built a couple pedals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I built Taylor like a booster pedal that he uses on all the solos and stuff. It's like a custom like analog like booster pedal made out of like super old like 1950s parts that I put together.
Nice.
And then just like constantly maintaining all the keeps me pretty busy all the time on the road, you know?
Right. Where do you get all your parts then?
There's a couple spots in LA where I'm from, which is like just kind of like electronic like junkyard. You just kind of go to and like grab as many crazy old parts as you can find, you know, and just like wait till you have a use for them, you know.
Is he just shipping you stuff on the road then?
Yeah.
Best of y'all. Bye-bye. Country Fried Rock. Find the full playlist from this episode on countryfriedrock.org. Check us out on iTunes. No music, just talk. Our theme music is from The Full Tones. Our Country Fried Rock stinger is from Steve Soto and the Twisted Hearts. Country Fried Rock. Copyright 2012 by Lily Pad Productions. All rights reserved.
Ever he been helping us some Country Fried Rock.
Hey y'all, it's Sloane Spencer. Thanks so much for finding all these new old episodes of Country Fried Rock. I've got something completely different available these days called Sleep with Rockstars. And it all started from a listener comment back in the very early days of Country Fried Rock who said, you know, I slow these down to 75% and fall asleep to them. And I was like, well, over the years I started thinking about it and I recently started Sleep with Rockstars. It's the Gen X Sleep Podcast, and you can find it at sleepwithrockstars.com or your favorite podcast app.